Hi, this is Chelsea Vale. You have found the Whole Heart Podcast, a podcast for conscious parents who want to do things differently. Parenting the Whole Heart Way is about love, connection, play, and raising our children naturally. It can get, at times, a little bit crunchy. Let's jump in.
Most of you probably know by now that I started a Waldorf-inspired school here in Bozeman, Montana, which is where I'm living now. And one of the reasons that I have not posted as many episodes on Whole Heart Crunchy Parenting is that I'm really focusing on getting the school going and the renovations for that, getting the teacher here, getting the curriculum put together, meeting with families. As you can imagine, there's quite a bit that goes into play whenever starting a school. So that being said, I am going to be doing a podcast under the name of the school, which is phonetically Epoch, E-P-O-C-H, but we call it Epic because it sounds really cool. But the podcast will be under the name of the school, Epoch, and I'll be posting some Waldorf-y things on there. But I wanted to put out an episode on one of the things that I think, whether you are a Waldorf family or not, I hope that this belief may bring you some comfort if you're still in the first epoch or first epic, which is the hands realm. And in Waldorf, that is the early years. It's like from about 2 to 9 or 0 to 7. There's some different beliefs on that, and I'll explain. So the belief in Waldorf is that all children, or actually all people, we are star children, star energies, and we come from the spirit world into the earth matrix. And so if you believe that there is a spiritual world out there, whether you're religious or not, there is a belief, you know, in Waldorf that there is a spirit world and that our children are star children and they come from the spirit world and they cross the imaginary rainbow bridge into the earth matrix. And that first matrix is the womb. And if you were to look up womb, it actually translates, in Latin translates to womb. So womb is the mother matrix, and that's the child's first exposure to the earth matrix. And then they're born, and there is some belief that from 0 to 2, they are still very much in the mother matrix, or some Waldorf-y people even believe it's up to age 3, where the child is still sort of in their astral body, and they are feeding off the energy of the mother, and that all of their beliefs and experiences in the earth matrix kind of come from the mother's belief and the mother's energy. And the, you know, sometimes when you have little ones, you may recognize, gosh, it seems like they're feeding off of me. I'm in a funk and they're in a funk, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you're not going crazy. They are. Toddlers feed very much off of the mother's energy and the mother's experiences. And there's even a belief that you have sort of this like mirror imagery in your mind, where if something is bothering you and worrying you, your child is picking up on that. And they too begin to worry about that because the belief is that they are still so firmly connected to the mother with that astral energy, that spirit energy, especially if you're still nursing. There is still a very strong connection from the baby to the mother. And, you know, in some families, I hear from dads like, well, I didn't really have much to do with them for the first few years. And like, that's okay. That's okay that you feel that way. Or when a dad goes to reach for their baby and the baby screams because they don't want to leave the mother, that's okay. It doesn't mean that the father doesn't have a role. But the belief is that in those early years that the mother is the primary support, and that her love and her connection and her physical proximity to the baby is the most important. And there is time for fatherhood, and there is a role. The father is meant to mother the mother. And the father, of course, is helping to take care of the home and taking care of the baby and doing the things that he can. But in those moments where the baby is kicking and screaming for the mother, there is something very primal there that the baby still really needs to be in close proximity to the mother, which is why in Waldorf we, you know, are big advocates of co-sleeping and wearing your baby, not using a carrier, but instead using a sling or a swaddle that mimics the womb, which is, you know, my company Wombi Med Pods. You know, we created a swaddle for babies that are in the hospital that can't be with the mother that mimics the womb to help ease the transition from the womb to the world. So everything in my career, if you're now suddenly like making the connections between the many things that I do, it is all about supporting the mother and the baby bond, right? So in those first few years, that child is still in that astral body. And then the belief is that as, you know, they start to lose their baby teeth, which happens around like 5 or 6, that the root of the teeth sort of symbolize the invisible umbilical cord to the mother. So that's when the changing of the teeth happens, is when the baby or the child moves from their astral body and is showing you that they are firmly rooted in their physical body. And then the changing of the teeth, you know, they move into understanding a little bit more about the way that the world works. They can handle a little bit more concrete information. That's when we do the 4 operations of math and more literacy and more spelling, a little bit more science and so on. So the Waldorf curriculum really follows where each child is in each stage of development. But one of the reasons I wanted to do this episode and explain these things to you guys is that I'm starting to see a trend. Actually, it's already been there, but I think because my children are of age, of school age, and because I started this school, I'm hearing from a lot of families that their child is being diagnosed with a sensory processing disorder, or they're being told that they're on the spectrum, but they're mild or moderate or, you know, so on. We keep diagnosing children with these quote unquote disabilities or, you know, attention deficit disorders. And we have all of these different things. And I keep telling the families, I'm like, yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of truth to some of it. Of course, if your child has autism or so on, a lot of those things, as we know, can be caused by, pollutants and vaccines and medications, toxins in our foods and so forth. So yes, those things are valid. I'm not saying that they aren't. But some of these children that I'm meeting, they're being told that there is something quote unquote wrong with them or something diagnosable, something that needs therapeutic intervention. But in reality, when I look at the children, I meet these children, they're just still in their star world. They're still this star child that's just trying to explore the earth matrix and become firmly rooted in where they are. When you see a child that's walking up on their tiptoes and kind of bouncing around, usually when they're in shoes or they do it when they're inside, it's because they don't really feel grounded. But then you watch that child barefoot when they're out in nature and watch them like how firmly, you know, they're flat footed and they run in the grass and they play in the dirt and they, you know, they pound on the mud and they grab clay and they climb a tree. That child is firmly rooted in their earth body when they are connected to the earth. But when you put them in a very abnormal environment, like a school, for example, a traditional school where it's, you know, cold floors with, you know, polyester or artificial fiber fabric or carpet or tile, it feels very odd. They have these bright fluorescent lights. The room is typically very cold. The air conditioner is jacked up for the adults in there, right? Who are wearing sweaters, by the way, and the children are in their play clothes and they're freezing and they're very uncomfortable and they're spending more time trying to acclimate to this very odd world. And usually in classrooms, there's also a lot of external stimulus. There's lots of posters and letters and numbers and shapes and patterns and so on and so on. And this is what's considered in Waldorf very offensive to the senses. And the child is spending so much time and energy trying to acclimate to this environment that they're not spending any time and energy on learning, growing, and developing. And so a lot of families that have come to us, they say, oh, by the way, my child has a sensory issue. I'm like, no, I've met your child. They're a star child. They're still in that star world. Have they lost any teeth yet? No, they haven't. Maybe we've got a loose tooth or whatever. I'm like, just wait a minute. In my world as a therapist, we were trained to use the DSM. It was the DSM-4 when I was a therapist. It's probably the DSM-5 or DSM-6 or 7 by now. Who knows? They keep changing the Diagnostic Statistical Manual. That's what DSM stands for. They keep changing it and adding more criteria and making the age that it's okay to diagnose a child younger and younger and younger and younger. And they keep moving the milestones that they should reach you know, further and further away to where, yes, it looks as though your child has something, but 3 years ago, they wouldn't have had it. They would not have been diagnosed with this. They would have said, no, they'll outgrow it. It's developmental. Let's wait till they're 7 or 8. It's no accident when you look at Steiner's work over 100 years ago that he talks about this stage of development, this hands realm that the kids are in, and hands is sort of the metaphor for body. They're in this body epoch where they're just trying to figure out how to get their astral body rooted and firmly into their earth body. And how that happens is a lot of sensory play, a lot of, you know, calming muted tones for visual stimulation. This is why we do the living stories. This is why we read books by Elsa Beskow and Jan Brett and Paul Galdone. And the books are very muted, natural earth tones, natural colors that we see in nature, we see in our homes. They're not bright neon and big pop-up pictures and, you know, funky plots with big explosions and name-calling and all of that kind of stuff, because it offends the senses. So our visual stimulation can be nature walks, flowers, stories with muted tones, imagery like candles and watercoloring and beeswax. And then we do a lot with our hands with beeswax modeling, for example, as well. Beeswax crayons. These are natural materials. This is why we use cotton and wool and wood and natural fibers, because for the child, this is not offensive to their senses. These are products that are made from things that grow in nature and help the child to feel firmly in their earth body and connected to the world around them without offending their senses. Same thing with the things that we taste. One of the reasons we focus on natural whole foods and not processed foods is because we don't want to offend the system. We don't want to offend the senses, their olfactory senses. For example, when you put a Pop-Tart in the toaster, it smells very sweet, very strange. And it's not natural. It's made with a bunch of things that are not real, versus when we give a child an apple. Well, that's something that grows in nature. It's a natural product, so it's not offensive to the olfactory senses or to the taste. It also does not offend the digestive system, because the body is ready and capable of digesting an apple. So it keeps the child's system in line with nature. And this is also why the sounds that we hear in a Waldorf classroom, that they are not sounds that come from, you know, a radio. And I know some people use this, you know, I definitely listen to music in my car, a variety of genres and so on. But for the most part, it's fairly quiet in a Waldorf classroom. You may hear a lyre or lyre, however you want to say it, a glockenspiel, maybe a drum, and not the kind of drum that you're thinking, but maybe a hand drum, to be a little bit softer and less offensive to the senses. And a lot of what we do is just trying to expose the child to nature and use natural materials and natural items until they are firmly rooted in their earth body, by letting them know this is a safe place. This is a place where we welcome you. We brought you here, and it's okay for you to take your time. It's okay for a baby to crawl outside naked or barefoot so that they can touch and feel the earth and begin getting acclimated to this earth matrix. And I thought that it was just really important to share some of this with you, to let you know that wherever your child is at right now developmentally, that's okay. It's okay that they want to be digging in the dirt. It's okay that they flee when they're in a daycare center, when, you know, a teacher reprimands them, or when the lights are bright, for them to shelter their eyes and curl up in a ball, because this is weird. And most childcare centers and schools are fairly strange to a young child. The clothing that people wear, the lights, the sounds, the colors, you know, and everyone wants you to think your child, there's something wrong with them because they can't adjust to Target. I'm sorry, but I am an adult and I have trouble adjusting to Target. It plays with my senses, and Sears and, you know, Home Depot, a lot of these places, God, I find it incredibly uncomfortable to be in there, because my world that I've created in my home is so zen and, you know, so spiritually minded and so clean and cozy, that when I go into some places like Walmart, good God, I almost have a panic attack when I go into Walmart, because there's so much. It's so big. It smells weird. It's cold. The lights are bright. And if you just take a moment to think about, you know, what would it be like if I was a star child, if I was an astral angelic being that was here for the first time. Like City of Angels, for example, is a really good, good example for this. You know, when, I think it's John Cusack or Nicolas Cage, I always get them confused. When their character, you know, gets from the spirit world, they're no longer an angel and they fall into the City of Angels to fall in love and they begin to experience everything in the world. How strange it is. Those sounds like of a car horn and that bright light is so bizarre to this angel because he had never had those physical senses before. So take a moment when you're by yourself and think about what would this place feel like if I was experiencing the world for the first time? And that's really where our children are at. When they're babies, they're completely aloof, right? When they first start to smile, I'm sorry, moms, to break your heart. They didn't smile at 2 weeks. They were having gas or they felt the release of letting the gas go, or they had, you know, bubbles in their tummy and they smile and they're not quite cerebral enough to be connecting to you in a way where it's like, there's my mom and I love my mom and I'm smiling because my mom. It's everything is kind of new and exciting in those first early days and especially the early years. But if you take a moment to try to get into their astral body and think, what would this earth matrix be like for me? Then you can start to empathize and realize how bizarre a daycare, a traditional, you know, like a Montessori or, you know, free play kind of wild daycare with all the primary colors and some of the drop-in centers around here. I walk in and I'm like, dear God, it smells like plastic diapers and Lysol and everything is plastic and fake and artificial. And there's kids running around and there's like this loud, like kids bop music playing. And, you know, these are offensive to them. And I always thought there was something wrong with my kids because I couldn't drop them off at like the gym daycare. And then as I started to think, wait, in Waldorf, they talk about kids' senses being offended. This is definitely offensive to their senses. And so I started doing my workouts by putting them in the stroller and just like walking outside or letting them play in the grass while I was doing like lunges and push-ups and other things to work out my body while they were little and letting them just get in touch with the earth, because I could not in good conscience drop them off at one of these shit show childcare places. You know, it just always bothered me because I'm like, I'm asking them to acclimate to the world instead of teaching the world how to acknowledge and empathize with where they are. Our world is not necessarily created for young children, and something, you know, something in that really needs to change. And you've probably heard me talk about my early experiences in my career and kind of what my focus was. I started as a theater major, believe it or not, but then I quickly moved into child development because I realized that each one of the plays and performances that I was doing, I felt like I was performing with the children and families that were in the audience. And I loved connecting with them and I loved hearing their stories and how their family lived and learned. And I was more excited about the families that I was performing for and with than the actual performances themselves. So I switched over to child development and I studied under Dr. Gary Landreth, who, if you don't know Dr. Landreth, like he's fucking famous in my field. And I was so obsessed with him in college. I would read everything that he did and I would go to all his workshops and all his retreats and I would always stay after and just try to have like a moment with him, just because like being in his presence as a young kid, as a young like aspiring child development and family therapist was like everything to me. And like I remember one time I even was brought to tears meeting him and his wife, because I in that moment realized like what a powerful, strong woman she must be to be with him and to support him in his career. And I met her at a conference and I was like so embarrassed that I like almost started to cry. And I was like, he has meant so much to me in my life. So Dr. Landreth was wonderful. And I studied Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, a lot in college as well. And what these two gentlemen had in common was, interestingly enough, I realized that they both studied Waldorf and Steiner's work. And I didn't learn this until like 15 years later when I started to see the correlation between some quotes that they that they had put out there. I was like, oh gosh, that's Steiner. That's so strange. And some of the ways that they talked about how the world should adjust to children and how the world should reach children, I was so in line with that mission and that belief. And it was all Steiner. And that kind of, you know, started opening the doors to understanding a little bit more about Waldorf for me. But one thing that they talked about was that we need to be speaking to children softer and calmer and recognizing that they are star children and that they don't need to be hit with, speed and bright colors and constantly changing scenes, that they are just trying to acclimate to the world. And if you think about Fred Rogers' show, for example, Mr. Rogers, he didn't focus on entertaining the child. He focused on meeting the child. He focused on talking with the children. He would look at the screen, he would look right at the camera, and he would say, "You're special just the way you are." Because that's what a child needs to hear, because they're acclimating to a world where at the time there was, Bozo the Clown and the Fraggles and these weird monsters and bright colors and popples and weird, synthetic giggles and sounds and stuff. And a lot of children, when they think about those shows, they've kind of forgotten some of those shows. They haven't really, they never spoke to the inner child. They entertained them at the time being, but it didn't speak to the inner child the way that Mr. Rogers did. Mr. Rogers would teach them about the postman, going to the hospital, getting your teeth checked, meeting a fireman, meeting a policeman, talking about the uniform that they would wear. Those were things that the children, the star children, were interested in because that was the real world. That was the world that they lived in. And Gary Landreth similarly would talk about, his dreams. And I haven't looked up to see if he's still alive. I'm sure he is, but I don't think he's active anymore in the field. But, one thing that he talked about was he dreamed of a world where he would walk into a children's hospital. This is going to bring me to tears because I tried so hard when I went to the hospital for this. Dreamed of a world where he would walk into a children's hospital or a school or a daycare or a place where children were served and where all of the art on the walls would be at the child's level. And, sending the child the message, this is a place for you. This is a place where you are valued, you are served, and this is for you. But if you walk into a hospital now or a dentist office or children's office, there's big furniture for the adults. There's big chairs that they have to lower for the child, which in that is literally showing the child, this is a place for adults, but because you're here, we're going to make some changes. Rather than a place that says, this is for you. We have toys for you in a restaurant. We have chairs that are low for you. We have art down on your level, just like we have art at the adult's eye level. We have art at the child's eye level. We don't have a world for children. We expect children to adjust to the world. And that is so backwards because then the child becomes an adult and they have inferiority complexes. They have adjustment issues. They have empathy issues. They have identity issues. Who am I? Where do I fit in the world? But in Waldorf and in a Waldorf home and a Waldorf school and in this attachment parenting belief and theory, we create a world for the child and we show the child you are valued, you are welcome, and it's okay for you to take your time adjusting to this world. And we will do our best to welcome you without judgment and without expectation. I don't care if you know your letters by age 3. You're still getting used to the earth matrix. I would rather you play with dough and clay and walk barefoot and climb trees to get your astral body firmly rooted in your physical body before I expect you to understand these fucking hieroglyphics that I tell you is the alphabet. That comes later. That comes at the changing of the teeth. And in many ways, the children just kind of know these things without being taught. They know them from exposure. They learn how to be, not because we reprimand and consequences and punishment, but because we live by example and we show them that I am a good person. And because I am a good person, good things will occur in my life. Because I work hard, I'm able to achieve great things. And in working hard, in front of the children, with the children, for the children, they begin to experience hard work. And that's a lot of what we do in a Waldorf school. The children wipe the tables, they sweep the floors, they clean the windows, they dust the toys, they put things away where they go. And we do a lot of things through imagination because we know that these children are still in the star world and it's something that they can relate to. They see the gnomes and the fairies and they see when the grass sways, it's Brother Wind. Brother Wind is saying hello. And they know these things because these are the elements of nature that dwell within them. When we tell them fairy tales, we are speaking to the archetypes that dwell within all of us. and I've spoken about this on other episodes, and this is why we're in such danger when we stop teaching fairy tales and when we, you know, move away from the folk tales and the fables and the classic stories, classic literature, like, you know, Peter Pan, for example. I was reading it to my children the other day, the original Peter Pan, not the Disney, you know, stupid golden book version, but the real Peter Pan novel. I was reading with my children, and it was so rich in its language and its description of Neverland and how Wendy and Moira had different Neverlands, and Peter and John had different Neverlands as well, because Neverland is not a place that you can tangibly get to in our physical world, but it is a place that all children know because they live in dream world. And I just found that so beautiful because it speaks to the soul of the children and lets them know that it's okay that you go to that world, and it's okay to use your imagination and revisit the spiritual world because you're not quite firmly rooted in your body. And when you are, then that's when we can move into more data and more intellectualization of our world. And I just find it so strange that in, you know, schools now, we focus so heavily on filling the children's heads with data and readying them for a job that doesn't even exist yet, when really education should be about bringing forth the imagination, innovation, problem solving, and creative thinking. And that happens from imagination. When we take that out in a Montessori school, for example, we take out imagination and we do work, but it's disguised as play. And it's so focused on developing the head of the child, the you know, intellectual, you know, thinking and data and skills, that we take them out of play far too soon, and we can't get it back. We can't go back to that place. But as adults, we expect them to be innovative and creative and imaginary and unique and be different. We expect all of that as adults, but why do we beat it out of them when they're children and remove them from this dream world? So I wanted to do this episode because I think it's very important to take a look at how we view children and what we're expecting of them and what we're pushing on them so early on. We cannot go back. We need to protect and preserve this dream world. And this is, you know, for a whole other episode, but right now we're in danger of true identity crisis with our young children because we are allowing prepubescent children to make a decision on their gender and their identity. And they have not even gotten firmly rooted in their earth bodies before we begin asking them to separate head, heart, and hands, mind, body, and soul. And we're pretending as though those three entities are, it's healthy if they're incongruent, but it's not. We have to merge head, heart, and hands. We have to let the child know it's okay that your head at this point in your life is still in imagination and still in dream world. And your heart is so connected to your mother's energy and your father's energy, that parental energy, because that is your only comfort in the earth matrix. And where your heart and your feeling is can sort of be all over the place right now because you're little and you're just trying to figure out what the world is. And in your body, you're not firmly in your body yet because you're so little. And we're expecting so much from these kids, and we're exposing them to so many adult agendas and adult beliefs and political ideals, and we're pushing vaccines which are completely artificial before this child has even gotten into their earth body. And we are in such danger as a society if we don't change the way that we look at children and view children and our expectations on them. So I just found it really important that I put this episode out there. So if someone tells you that your child has sensory issues, I want you to go, yeah, no shit. Which is what I typically tell parents, like, yeah, no shit, they have sensory issues. They move their hands a lot because they're trying to feel, what does it feel to feel? What is it like to feel? What does it feel like when I walk in shoes or on the ground or in a home or on this, you know, tile? It's okay that they're barefoot. They're wanting to feel with their skin, with this organ that covers their whole body that's new to them. Every sensation is new. When they act out, when they misbehave, it's because they're curious, not because they're naughty. I believe that children are all inherently good. Some of them are total assholes, right? But it's my belief as an adult that they're being an asshole. But if I get out of my adult mind and I try to get back into my child's mind and meet them where they're at, then I'm like, oh, they just wanted to know what it would feel like to knock over the milk. They didn't want to make you mad. They just weren't paying attention to what they were doing because they were involved, they were connected with another sense at the time, maybe their visual sense. And so they just didn't pay attention and they knocked the milk over. If we change the way that we view children and we just accept the fact that this is an angel being that's trying to figure out what the hell this world is about, we would be a lot more patient and a lot more calm and a lot more understanding. And we would have less people with all sorts of fucking diagnosable issues before they're like 6 or 7. And then these issues would not stay with them well into adulthood. And then have people who are needing psychedelics, ayahuasca and mushrooms and all of these other things, which are beautiful modalities of reaching the spiritual world again. But we should be able to use them as fully functioning, healthy adults to reach these places and to bring ourselves to a higher world, a higher place of understanding, rather than how they're being used now is for therapy. And they're only approved for therapeutic benefits because we're trying to get people to undo a lot of the damage that was done in their childhood. I mean, some people are using ayahuasca to rebirth themselves. Some people in, you know, when they use DMT, for example, they go back to their childhood and they go back and they see their parents and they see their maternal energies and their paternal energies, and they have to reparent themselves. And there's a lot of therapies that focus on inner child work. We wouldn't need to do any of that if we focused on creating a world that speaks to the child and is comfortable for the child and welcoming to the child. Then each one of these astral beings, as they get firmly rooted in the earth matrix and they get into a place of higher understanding through Waldorf education, for example, which focuses on merging the head and the heart and the hands and speaking to the archetypes that dwell within all of us and getting the children in touch with nature and understanding the interconnectedness of the universe and the spiritual world and the physical world are now merged, then when they're in adulthood, then they can use the plant world, the ayahuasca, the DMT, the mushrooms, and the other psychedelic modalities of reaching the spiritual world again to get to a higher place, a higher understanding, rather than the way it's used now, which is just to get a base understanding of who am I and where do I fit in the world. That should have already been done. If we do this, then we help each one of these astral beings from the next generation reach a higher place and a higher world and a higher understanding. And if you're listening to this podcast and you're a Christian or you Catholic or Buddhist, whatever your belief is, these are not drugs. These have been named drugs by the government. These are plants that allow us to reach a higher place. Meditation can do the same thing. Sound therapies can do the same thing. Yoga, meditation, these are all modalities that can be used to reach a higher place, a higher understanding of ourselves and our world. And they're beautiful modalities. But I encourage everyone to try to do a little bit of research, even if you're Christian. These are plants, if you're a Christian and you believe that God created the world, the physical world, and the spiritual world, I believe that you can use the physical world to reach the spiritual world. I believe that that is a gift. And I believe that if you believe that there is one God, I believe that you can speak to him using the plants and entering plant world. These are all really beautiful things that it's a shame that our culture wants to shame them or abuse them or misuse them. I just believe that we can all reach a higher place if we open our minds to some of these, some of the gifts from the physical world that allow us to reach the spiritual world. And in the wrong hands, of course, they're going to be used and abused, right? But I think that if we help our children in the world right now get in touch with who they are on the inside and slowly take their time to adapt to the physical world, I believe that as adults, they will know higher worlds, they will know higher powers, and they will know God in such a deeper way than they do right now. And when I say God, what I mean is just, I'm trying to speak to the all faiths that listen to my podcast and all faiths that, subscribe to the Waldorf way of being, which is actually, Waldorf is the educational approach to this, but everything I'm speaking about is actually anthroposophy, which is the study of what it means to be human. And I believe that we can all reach higher worlds and we can reach our God, our universal love and our universal being. There is a higher power out there. That's my belief. And I hope that that's your belief as well. But I believe that we can reach that by getting in touch with the children. And in order to reach children's minds, we have to reach their heart, which is why originally when I called my business, my former business, Whole Heart, and I was focusing on just teaching parents and teachers how to work with young children and how to educate young children, my focus was reaching children in their heart in order to access their minds. And that is truly what I think Waldorf education is. Montessori focuses on developing the mind. Waldorf focuses on developing the heart, the soul, the body, and then accessing the mind by proxy. So thank you so much for listening to this. I hope that I did not offend anyone, but I hope that I've opened your mind to a different way of thinking about children, being with children, and hopefully educating children, which is what I'm hoping to do here. So please look out for EPOC, which is actually we pronounce it EPIC. EPIC is going to be the name of a new podcast that I'm going to put out that is going to focus solely on Waldorf education and anthroposophy, mostly because, when my children were little, I spoke a lot on, babies and toddlers and all of those things. So that's where my children were. And I'm not so much connected with that world anymore because I'm, owning and operating a grades program. We're going to have early childhood as well, but we are going to have a grades program, and my focus is really going to be on that age group. And so if you've followed along with me and your children are now getting into the school age, like 4s, 5s, 6, or even adolescents, I hope that I can appeal to a new audience, and I hope that you will follow and subscribe to that podcast. It's just going to be called EPIC. At least that's what I think it's going to be called. Maybe I should do another episode if I change the name, but I think it's going to be EPIC, EPOCH, and I'll probably post the first one September 1st. I'm looking to probably interview some advocates in the Waldorf community, some various, I guess, like leaders, teachers, and hopefully even our own teacher, maybe some parents and followers, just to interview them and find out, what are they learning? What's working? What's not working? What are some aha moments that we can all share together? And then I'll be providing some education as well. So I hope that you will subscribe to that podcast and share it with friends and family. And one other request that I have from each one of you, I almost never ask for sponsorship or money on this podcast. This podcast was really just a way to connect with the outside world when I was a struggling single mom and share some knowledge and education that I had with all of you. But this school has really become my focus. I would love my legacy to be that I created something out of nothing, something beautiful, literally from the dirt out here on my 5.5-acre property in Bozeman. We are looking to move the program from this property into a permanent location in town so that it can become a fully functional K-12, K-8 Waldorf school here in Bozeman. And we have a place on our website to donate. There's a donate button at the top. There is a dream list. There's also a Zephy link if you scroll down to the bottom. And I would really appreciate from each one of you who have probably been listening for the last 4 or 5 years to the podcast, who have enjoyed some of the blogs, some of the videos. I never ask for money. I've never had advertisements or anything on any of my information. It's all been for free. If you could take a look at what you've learned, how you work with your child, how you deal with your partner, and how you look at the world, your place in the world, try to put a number on it, put a value on it. What have the last 4 or 5 years and hundreds of episodes meant to you? Look at that, put a value at it, put a number on it. And if you would be willing to donate that to the school, this would help us get into a permanent location here in Bozeman and create something that outlives us all. And, I would encourage you to go to EPIC, EPOCHBZN, EPICBZN.com, and submit a donation to support the school, support me, and our goals and our missions. We would like to have a culture trip at the end of the year. We'd like to go to either Guatemala or Costa Rica and study the way of life there, study the flora and the fauna with the children, but also meet the children who live in poverty that we will be doing a fundraiser with Mayan Hands this year, but also give back to that community and find ways that we can help and be of service. And that's something that I really want to make happen this year. But our nearer goal is getting into this permanent building here in Bozeman that we've got our eyes set on, but we are a few thousand shy of getting there. And we are a nonprofit, so your donation is tax deductible. please, 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 if you have it in your heart, if you have the means, if you are able to, please go to epicbzn.com and make a donation to the school to help support this goal and some of the missions that we have to give back to the community and to the world. I hope that you have really enjoyed this podcast. I'm not sure if this is going to be my last episode or not, but I do think that my focus is more on the school right now, and I will be doing another podcast starting kind of from square one. So you can subscribe to that one. September 1st is going to be when the first episode airs. And I thank you so much for listening. I wish you all the best. If you don't follow me on Instagram, you can follow me at epic_BZN on Instagram, which will be all about the school. But I also have my personal page if you just want to follow my life with my twins and everything we're doing here in Bozeman, Chelsea Vale - Whole Heart on Instagram. And just please keep following, keep supporting, keep listening, and keep changing the world one child at a time. Thank you. Be well.